the 29th word. This, the 29th word, is about the immortality of man's spirit, the angels, and the resurrection. In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Therein came down the angels and the spirit by the permission of their sustainer. Quran, 97-4. Say, the spirit comes by command of my sustainer. Quran, 3-191. This treatise consists of an introduction and two main aims. Introduction. It may be said that the existence of the angels and spirit beings is as definite as that of human beings and animals. Indeed, as is explained in the first step of the 15th word, reality undoubtedly requires and wisdom certainly demands that like the earth the heavens have inhabitants, and that its inhabitants are intelligent, and suitable for the heavens. In the tongue of the Sharia, those inhabitants, of which there are numerous kinds, are called angels and spirit beings. Reality requires it to be thus. For despite the earth's smallness and insignificance in relation to the heavens, its being filled with intelligent beings and from time to time being emptied and then refilled with new ones suggests, indeed, states clearly, that the heavens too, with their majestic constellations like adorned palaces, are filled with animate creatures, the light of existence, and conscious and intelligent creatures, the light of animate creatures. Like man and the jinn, those creatures are spectators of the palace of the world, and ponderers over the book of the universe, and heralds of this realm of dominicality. With their universal and comprehensive worship, they represent the glorification of the large and universal beings in the universe. The nature of the universe surely points to their existence. For since it is embellished and decked out with uncountable numbers of finely adorned works of art and meaningful decorations and wise embroideries, it self-evidently requires the gazes of thoughtful admirers and wondering, appreciative lovers, it demands their existence. Yes, just as beauty requires a lover, so as food is given to the hungry. Thus, the sustenance of spirits and nourishment of hearts in this boundless beauty of art looks to the angels and spirit beings. It points to them. For while this infinite adornment requires an infinite duty of contemplation and worship, man and the jinn can perform only a millionth of that infinite duty, that wise supervision, that extensive worship. This means that boundless varieties of angels and spirit beings are necessary to perform those duties, and to fill and inhabit the mighty mosque of the world with their ranks. Indeed, a species of the spirit beings and angels is present in every aspect, in every sphere, of the universe, each charged with a duty of worship. It may be said according to both the narrations of hadiths and the wisdom in the order of the world that from lifeless planets and stars to raindrops, all are ships or vehicles for a kind of angel. The angels mount these vehicles with divine permission and travel observing the manifest world. They represent their praise and glorification. It also may be said that certain sorts of living bodies act as aeroplanes for different kinds of spirits. From the birds of paradise, called the green birds in a hadith which says, the spirits of the people of paradise enter into green birds in the intermediate realm and travel around paradise in them, to flies, each is a vehicle for a sort of spirit. The spirits enter into them at a divine command, and through the faculties and senses of those living bodies like the eyes and ears, observe the miracles of creation in the corporeal world. They perform the particular glorification of each. Just as reality necessitates it to be thus, so does wisdom. For, with an intense activity, the all-wise Maker continuously creates subtle life and luminous intelligent beings from dense earth, which has little connection with spirit, and from turbid water, which has small relation with the light of life. He surely then creates certain sorts of intelligent beings from the seas of light and even from the oceans of darkness, from the air, electricity, and other subtle matter suitable for spirit and appropriate for life. And surely these creatures are exceedingly numerous. Consider the following. A creature so minute it can only be seen with a microscope has such acute senses it can hear its friend's voice, and see its sustenance. It has extremely sensitive and sharp senses. This demonstrates that the effects of life increase and the light of the spirit intensifies in proportion to the reducing and refining of matter. It is as though the more matter is refined and the more we become distanced from our material existences, the closer we draw to the world of the spirit, the world of life, and the world of consciousness, and the more intensely the heat of the spirit and the light of life are manifested. Is it therefore at all possible that there should be this many distillations of life, consciousness, and spirit within this veil of materiality, and that the inner world which is beyond this veil should not be full of conscious beings and beings with spirits? Is it at all possible that the sources of these numberless distillations, flashes, and fruits of meaning, spirit, life and the truth apparent in this material existence in the manifest world should be ascribed only to matter and the motion of matter, and be explained by it? God forbid. Absolutely not. These innumerable distillations and flashes demonstrate that this material and manifest world is but a lace veil strewn over the inner and spirit worlds. Second fundamental point. It may be said that all the scholars of the speculative and the scriptural sciences have, knowingly or unknowingly, united to effect a consensus in affirming, despite difference of expression, the existence and reality of the angels and spirit beings. One group of peripatetic philosophers of the Illuminist school even, who made much progress in the study of matter, without denying the meaning of the angels, stated that each realm in creation has a spiritual, incorporeal essence. They described the angels thus. Also, a group of the early philosophers who were Illuminists, being compelled to accept the meaning of the angels, were only wrong in naming them, the 10 intellects and masters of the realms of creation. Through the inspiration and guidance of revelation, scholars of all the revealed religions have accepted that each realm of creation has an angel appointed to it, and have named them the mountain angel, the sea angel, and the rain angel, for example. Even the materialists and naturalists, whose reasoning is restricted to what is immediately apparent to them and who have in effect fallen from the level of humanity to that of inanimate matter, rather than being able to deny the meaning of the angels, have been compelled to accept them in one respect, though naming them the flowing forces. Hashiya, in English footnote. They have been unable to find a way to deny the reality and meaning of the angels and spirit beings. In fact, they have been compelled to affirm them in one respect by claiming them to be one of the natural laws, although they described them wrongly, naming them kuwa yi saria or flowing forces. Hey you who consider yourselves to be so clever. Oh you wretched man who is reluctant to accept the angels and spirit beings, on what do you base this view? What facts do you rely on that you oppose the conscious or otherwise unanimity of all the scholars concerning the existence and reality of the meaning of the angels and the real existence of spirit beings? And since, as was proved in the first fundamental point, life is the revealer of beings, indeed, is their consequence, their quintessence. And since all the scholars are in effect unanimous in their acceptance of the meaning of the angels, and this world of ours has been filled to such a degree with animate creatures and beings with spirits, is it all possible that the vastness of space and the rarefied heavens would remain empty of dwellers, have no inhabitants? You should never think that the laws in force in this creation are sufficient for the universe to be alive. Because those governing laws are insubstantial commands. They are imaginary principles. They may be considered as non-existent. If there were no absolutely obedient creatures called angels to represent them, make them apparent, and take their reins into their own hands, those laws could not be defined as existent, nor be represented as having a particular identity, nor be an external reality. Whereas, life is an external reality, and an imaginary command cannot sustain an external reality. In short, since the scholars of religion and philosophy, and of the speculative and scriptural sciences, have in effect agreed that beings are not restricted to this manifest world, and since, despite being inanimate and inappropriate for the formation of spirits, the visible manifest world has been adorned to such an extent with beings with spirits, existence is surely not limited to it. There are numerous other levels of existence in relation to which the manifest world is an embroidered veil. Furthermore, since, just as the sea is appropriate for fish, and the world of the unseen and the world of meaning appropriate for spirits, and this necessitates their being filled with them, and since all commands testify to the existence of the meaning of the angels, certainly and without any shadow of a doubt, the most beautiful form of the angels' existence and spirit beings' reality, and the most rational view of their nature which sound intellects will accept and acclaim, is that which the Quran has expounded and elucidated. The Quran of Miraculous Exposition states that the angels are honored slaves. Never contesting a command, they do whatever they are commanded. The angels are subtle, luminous beings, and are divided into different kinds. Just as mankind as a nation and human beings are the bearers, representatives, and embodiments of the Sharia or code of divine laws which proceeds from the attribute of divine speech, so are the angels a mighty nation, and those of them who are workers are the bearers, representatives, and embodiments of the code of laws pertaining to creation, which proceeds from the attribute of divine will. They are a class of God slaves who are dependent on the commands of the creative power and pre-eternal will, which are the true effective agent, and for whom all the heavenly bodies are like places of worship, like mosques. Third fundamental point. The question of the angels and spirit beings is one of those questions in which the reality of a universal may be inferred from the existence of a single particular. If a single individual is seen, the existence of the species may be concluded. Whoever denies it as a member of the species to which it belongs. While whoever accepts the single individual is compelled to accept its whole species. Since it is thus, consider the following. Have you not seen and heard that all the scholars of the revealed religions throughout the ages from the time of Adam until now have agreed on the existence of the angels and the reality of spirit beings? The different groups of mankind have concurred in having seen and conversed with angels and in their narrations concerning them, as though they were discussing and narrating events about one another. Do you think that if a single angel had not been seen, and the existence of one or numerous individuals not been established through observation, and their existence not been perceived clearly, self-evidently, that it would have been at all possible for such accord and such a consensus to continue, and to continue persistently and unanimously in such an affirmative and positive manner, based on observation? Also, is it at all possible that the source of this general belief should not be some necessary principles and self-evident matters? And is it all possible that a baseless delusion should persist and become permanent in all the beliefs of mankind throughout all the revolutions it has undergone? And is it all possible that the basis of the assertion of these scholars of the religions, of this mighty consensus, should not be a certain intuition and empirical certainty? And is it at all possible that that certain intuition and empirical certainty which result from innumerable signs, and those signs which have been observed on numerous occasions, and those numerous observations should not all, without doubt or hesitation, be founded on necessary principles? In which case, the cause and the basis of the assertion of the universal belief held by these scholars are the necessary and categorical principles resulting from the great number of times the angels and spirit beings have been observed and seen, which demonstrates the strength of the consensus. Furthermore, is it all possible, rational or feasible that the unanimous testimony of the prophets and saints, who are like the suns, moons, and stars in human society, concerning the existence of the angels and spirit beings and their actually seeing them, should be prey to doubts or be the object of suspicion? Especially since they are qualified to speak in this matter. It is obvious that two people who are qualified to speak on a matter are preferable to thousands who are not. Moreover, in this question they are affirming a matter, and people who affirm a matter are preferable to thousands who deny or reject it. Is it at all possible for there to be any doubt concerning the statements of the Quran of Miraculous Exposition, the Sun of Suns in the World of Truths, which never at any time sets, shining continuously in the skies of the universe? And can there be doubt concerning the testimony and witnessings of the Muhammadan being peace and blessing be upon him, the Son of Prophethood? Since, if on a single occasion the existence of a single spirit being is verified, This demonstrates the real existence of the whole species. And since it proves the existence of the whole species to be true, for sure, the best and most rational and acceptable form of their real existence will be similar to that expounded by the Sharia, described by the Quran, and seen by the one who ascended to a distance of 2 bow lengths. Fourth fundamental point. If the creatures of the universe are observed with care, it may be seen that like particulars, universals have collective identities, each of which appears as a universal function. It is apparent that each performs a universal duty. For example, just as a flower is itself displays an embroidery full of art, and with the tongue of its being recites the creator's names, so the garden of the globe resembles a flower, and performs an extremely orderly, universal duty of glorification. And just as a fruit issues a proclamation expressing its glorification of God within an order and regularity, so does a mighty tree in its entirety have a most well-ordered natural duty and worship. And just as a tree glorifies God through the words of its fruits, flowers and leaves, so do the vast oceans of the heavens glorify the all-glorious Creator and praise the sublime Maker through their suns, moons, and stars, which are like words, and so on. Although external beings are outwardly inanimate and unconscious, they all perform extremely vital, living, and conscious duties in glorification. Of a certainty, therefore, just as angels are their representatives expressing their glorification in the world of the inner dimensions of things, so are they the counterparts, dwellings, and mosques of those angels in the external and manifest world. As is explained in the fourth branch of the 24th word, the first of the four categories of workers employed by the all-glorious Maker of the palace of this world is that of the angels and spirit beings. Since, without knowing it, plants and inanimate beings perform extremely important though wageless duties at the command of one who does know. Also without knowing it, animals serve extensive universal aims in return for an insignificant wage. And since, observedly, in return for 2 wages, one immediate and the other postponed, human beings, knowing the all-glorious Maker's aims, are employed through their conforming to them, their taking a share of everything for themselves, and their supervising the other servants. It will certainly be the first category, as well as the fourth, which will constitute the servants and workers. They both resemble human beings in that knowing the universal aims of the all-glorious Maker, they conform to them through worship, and they are contrary to them. For being beyond sensual pleasure and some partial wage, they consider sufficient the pleasure, perfection, delight and bliss they experience through the all-glorious Maker's attention, command, favor, consideration, and name, through their perception of Him, connection with Him, and proximity to Him. They labor with the purest sincerity, their duties of worship varying according to their different kinds, and according to the varieties of the creatures in the universe. Like in a government there are various officials in the various offices, so the duties of worship and glorification vary in the spheres of the realm of dominicality. For example, through the power, strength, reckoning and command of God Almighty, the Archangel Michael is like a general overseer of God's creatures sown in the field of the face of the earth. If one may say so, he is the head of all the angels that resemble farmers. And, through the permission, command, power, and wisdom of the all-glorious Creator, the incorporeal shepherds of all the animals have a head, a supreme angel appointed to the task. Thus, since it is necessary for there to be an angel appointed over each of these external creatures in order to represent in the world of the inner dimensions of things the duties of worship and service of glorification which it performs, and to present them knowingly to the divine court, the way the angels are described in the narrations of the bringer of sure news, peace and blessing be upon him, is certainly most appropriate and rational. For example, he declared, "There are some angels which have either 40,000 heads. In all the heads are 40,000 mouths, and with the 40,000 tongues in each of those mouths they glorify God in 40,000 ways. This hadith has a reality and both contains a meaning, and has a form, or manner of description. Its meaning is as follows. The angels' worship is both extremely orderly and perfect, and most universal and comprehensive. As for the form of the truth, it is this. There are certain mighty corporeal beings that perform their duties OT worship with 40,000 heads in 40,000 ways. For example, the heavens glorify God with the suns and the stars. While the earth, which is a single being, performs its duty of worship, its dominical glorification with 100,000 heads and with the hundreds of thousands of tongues in each mouth. Thus, the angel appointed to the globe of the earth has to be seen in this way in order to display this meaning in the world of the inner dimensions of things. I myself, even, saw a medium-sized almond tree which had close on 40 large branches like heads. When I looked at one branch, I saw it had nearly 40 smaller branches like tongues. Then I looked at one tongue of one of those small branches, 40 flowers had opened on it. I studied the flowers considering the wisdom in them, and saw in each close on 40 exquisite and well-ordered stamens, colors, and arts, each of which proclaimed one of the all-glorious Maker's names and their constantly varying manifestations. Is it at all possible that the all-wise and beauteous One, who is the all-glorious Maker of the almond tree, would impose this many duties on an inanimate tree, and not mount on it an appointed angel appropriate to it, to be like its spirit, to understand and express its meaning, proclaim it to the universe, and present it to the divine court? O friend! So far, our explanation has been an introduction to bring the heart to acceptance, the reason to submission, and to compel the soul to surrender. If you have understood it to some degree, and wish to meet with the angels, prepare yourself. Moreover, purify yourself of wrongful prejudice. Now look, the doors of the world of the Quran are open. Look, the paradise of the Quran is with wide open gates. Quran, 38-50. Enter and look. See the angels in beautiful form in the paradise of the Quran. Each of its revealed verses is a place to alight, so look from them. By the winds sent forth one after another, to man's profit. Which then blow violently in tempestuous gusts, and scatter things far and wide, then separate one from another, then spread abroad a message. Quran, 77:1-5. By the angels who tear out the souls of the wicked with violence, by those who gently draw out the souls of the blessed, and by those who gently glide along on errands of mercy. Then press forward as if in a race, then arrange to do the commands of their Lord. Quran, 79:1-5. Therein come down the angels and the Spirit by God's permission in every errand. Quran, 97:4. Over which are appointed angels stern and severe, who flinch not from executing the commands they receive from God, but do precisely what they are commanded. Quran, 66:6. Also listen to. Glory be to Him. They are but servants raised to honor. They speak not before He speaks and they act, in all things, by His command. Quran, 21:26-7. Listen to its praises. And if you wish to meet with the jinn, enter this resounding surah. Say, it has been revealed to me that a company of jinn listened to the Quran. Quran, 72:1. See them and listen to what they say. Take a lesson from them. Look, they are saying, we have really heard a wonderful recital. It gives guidance to the right, and we have believed therein. We shall not join in worship any gods with our Lord. Quran, 72:1-2.